Okay, Tov world. Today's daf in Mesechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Tet. So we've been in the middle of the sugya of the difference between execution in the Beis Din, in Sanhedrin, and the Din of Morid B'Malchus. We were talking about the Machloket, about whether the Malchus, the government, confiscates actually the property, if they want to, of the person that was accused and convicted of Morid B'Malchus and executed. And so we started, as part of bringing proofs, to discuss the whole case of Yoav. And in the case of Yoav, we found he didn't want to be judged as a Morid B'Malchus, and apparently that meant that there was a difference between being judged by Beis Din or by being judged as the Morid B'Malchus. And we had the whole discussion about the curses that David had put onto Yoav and what happened yesterday to the descendants of David, which led us to understand it's always better to be the one who is cursed than the one who does the cursing. Because as the one who is cursed, it's highly likely that the curse will go back on the head of the one who actually did the cursing. But if you open up your fat mouth and you think you know that this person deserves to be cursed, generally what will happen is that you end up cursing yourself. Okay, that was something of a tangential discussion. Now let's get back to the whole story of Yoav. So the last we left him, right before Yoav said, well, he said to Benayo, well, you better go back and tell Shlomo he's got to make up his mind if he's ready to take these curses on himself, because he's certainly not going to get away with both. If he's going to kill me, then that means that the curses that his father David put on me were inappropriate. And therefore, they're going to go right back on David's head, which means it's going to affect him and his family. And Shlomo, we saw yesterday, chose to tell Benayo to have him killed nonetheless, and that, in fact, we traced over the course of generations the way that these curses actually fell on the family. But getting back to the story, so what happened was that Yoav had insisted he doesn't want to be taken away from the Mizbeach. He wants to go to Sanhedrin and let Sanhedrin judge him. And that way, if he's found to be guilty, so then at least he will leave his property to his own family. So sure enough, Atyu Eliyoav and Dainai. So they went ahead, and again, it doesn't say this, Farish. I mean, we're just assuming that since Yoav had refused to leave because he wanted to go to Sanhedrin, we're assuming that in fact he actually had been brought to Sanhedrin. And there Benayo accused him in front of the Sanhedrin, and said to him, "My taima ketalte la Avner. Why in the world did you kill Avner Bener?" So remember what happened there. It's a very, very painful story. What happened was that after Shaul HaMelech died, he left his son Ish-Boshet. So there was, for a long time, a civil war, really, between the people that were behind the Malchus of Binyamin, which in this point already was after the death of Shaul and was led by Ish-Boshet. And his general, his chief general, was a fellow named Avner Bener, who was a tremendous tzaddik, a Godel Hador. And Avner, we saw before, he had supported for those years Ish-Boshet. Because of that, he was chayev, because he put off Malchus Beis David, as we said. Okay, but that story is a different story. What happened was is that David HaMelech met up with Avner, and he forgave Avner, and he actually told Avner that he was going to make Avner the general of the army in place of Yoav. And this made Yoav very angry, and he, as we'll see, he felt that Avner should be killed, and we'll see why. And so David had sent Avner to support him, and Avner was actually very loyal to David at this point, but Yoav sent, he pretended, he sent messages to Avner that he should return to the Machane of David, that they had the message, they needed to talk. And so Avner comes back into the Machane, and Yoav comes to him and pretends to be a friend, And he's about to kiss him, and he grabs his beard, and he wants to show him how much he loves him. And in the end, he stabs him and kills him there on that spot. And so the first thing they asked when they accused Yoav of murder, so they asked him, "My time katalti le'Avner. Why in the world did you murder Avner? Do you have anything to say in your favor?" So Yoav said, "Well, of course, I have everything to say in my favor. Go el adam da asa el havai. Listen, Avner killed my brother, Asael, and I am a goel hadam. And a goel hadam is supposed to be the one who actually avenges the death of his family. So that was on me to do, and it was quite clear that he had murdered him, and he was not under protection at that time. Remember, what we do is normally when someone is seems to be chayev because he's a murderer, he's sent to the Ir Miklat, which protects him from the Goel Hadam. And then he's brought to Beis Din under guard from the Ir Miklat, and the Beis Din determines whether he's chayev or not. But the Goel Hadam, in the event that this person was warned, which he certainly was in this case, as you can read in the Psukim, and I had, therefore, the chiyuv to kill this guy. I am his goel hadam. It's my brother. So Avner killed him. So the Beis Din says to Yoav, but he was supposed to be killed. He was chasing after him. Remember what happened over there is that Avner had been defeated at that point in the Milchoma with Yoav, and he was trying to run away together with the other forces of Shaul. And what happened was is that Asael, who was an incredible Olympic runner, as the Pasuk says, as light as a deer on his feet, he was chasing after Asael. Asael was chasing after Avner, and Avner repeatedly warns him and tells him, "Listen, don't make me kill you. Go chase somebody else if you want to make yourself happy by killing someone. But I really, how am I ever going to face your brother, Yoav, if I have to kill you? Do yourself a favor and do me a favor. Please don't keep chasing me." But Asael was following him like a guided missile. It was getting closer and closer. There was no way to outrun Asael. And so in the end, basically, Avner was an incredible shot. And as he's running, he turns around and he gets a spear directly in his fifth rib. We'll see later on the details of that and why that was a very precise way of killing him. And because of that, he had a right to kill him. So why do you have a right to be a goel hadam to kill Avner if Avner was only killing to save himself, and you're allowed to kill a rodef in self-defense? So Yoav said, because, as you know perfectly well, the din is that the only time that you have a right to kill in self-defense is if there's no other way to save your own life. Well, why didn't he shoot him in a leg or something? Why did he kill him? So hayalo latzilo be'achad me'evarav. Avner could have saved himself. All he needed to do was shoot Asael in the leg. And we see that he bedafka killed him. So he's considered to be a rotzeach. There was no heter to do that. And I am a goel hadam. And so I was the one who killed him back. You can't blame me for that. Omale, so ben Yoav says to Yoav, I mean, the guy's running away. He's desperate to escape. And you're telling me he should have aimed exactly at his feet. And he killed him because he had no choice. He just threw a spear at him. "Oh, really?" says Yoav. "Threw a spear at him." He manages to throw a spear at him exactly in the Dofen Chamishit, as it says in the Posek, "Tichtiv Ayakeo Avner Biachare Hachanit El Hachomesh." So he got the back of his spear, you understand, while he's running, exactly at his fifth rib, and that was meaningful, because as Rabbi Yochanan explained, when it says a chomesh, it means bedofen hachamishit b'bakom shemora v'kaveh tluyin bo. He got him precisely at the place where the gallbladder and the liver come together, and he was able to kill him directly by destroying his liver, and it was an extremely vulnerable place. And you're telling me that he managed to do, but he couldn't shoot him in the leg. That's ridiculous. If he was able to aim that perfectly, despite the fact that he was running, he certainly could have killed him and could have stopped him in a way that wouldn't have been fatal. He wanted to kill him. And that's why I am the Goel Adam. He was a murderer. All right, says the Besdin of Benayo. So let's forget about Avner for a moment, okay? Nizal Avner. All right, maybe you're right about that. But you also killed Amasa ben Yeter. You're a double murderer. Because what happened is that even though Amasa was against David HaMelech and had supported Avshalom, and he was actually the head of the army of Avshalom, afterwards, David actually gave him Mechila Gemura and told him that he wants him to be his new general. And sorry, I got mixed up. That's who Yoav saw as the new general. He wanted him to be his new general, and eventually he was going to take the place of Yoav. And right now, they were having trouble with the Sheva ben Bichri. You'll remember when David HaMelech came back after the attack of Avshalom, Sheva ben Bichri led a rebellion against David, and everyone had started to follow him. We don't want to have anything to do with this guy. And he was worried that if Sheva ben Bichri gets himself a fortified city and starts setting up shop there with an alternative Malchus, it's going to be a disaster. So his opportunity was that he asks Amasa to go and to fight off Sheva ben Bichri. So fine. So Sheva ben Bichri actually, he didn't do the job, as we'll see in a moment, correctly. So why did you kill Amasa? So Yoav said to him, why did I kill Amasa? He didn't do his job correctly. And he was a Murid B'malchus, because it says Beferish that David HaMelech says to Amasa, Hazek li et ish Yehuda shloshet yamim, give yourself 3 days maximum to get together an army of everyone that could fight here in Yehuda to go and to fight off Sheva ben Bichri. Okay, so he goes, Vayelech Amasela Hazik et Yehuda, Vayochar. Vayochar means he was late. He didn't do the job within the 3 days that he was given. So that means that he was a Murid B'malchut. So I killed him. Omar Leh, the reason that he was late was because Amasa was smarter than you, and he knew how to be Deresh Achin V'Rakin. What's the Achin V'Rakim that we're referring to over here? Well, we'll see what happened. He comes to gather everybody together. He goes to the big yeshivas where everybody is learning. And, of course, the one place where you get soldiers is in yeshiva. So you go to the yeshiva, and everybody comes immediately to the war to fight as required, which was the derech of the yeshiva. But it happened, Ashkechinu de Petiach Lubim Mesechta. They had just started a new Mesechta, and they were trying to finish up, and they were in the middle of Shir, and he felt that he can't interrupt in the middle of Shir. So he said, look, it's true that the Pasuk says, Kol ish asher yamre et picha, v'lo yishma et dvorecha, l'chol asher titzavenu yumad. So this was said to Yoshua, and this is the basis that we have, that a Murid B'Malchus is supposed to be killed. Because Klal Yisrael says to Yoshua at a din of Melech that anybody who doesn't do what it is that you command him should be put to death. So he was derish like this. Yochal afilu l'divrei Torah. You might think that this is even if you are told by the Melech to do something that is against the Torah. So therefore, the pasuk continues on, Rak Chazak V'Amatz. So everyone told Yoshua, the only thing is, you should be Chazak V'Amatz. You should be strong. You should have courage. So what's the meaning of that Rak? Remember that every time we find a Rak, it means that it's being mamayit certain cases. So this means that if a king gives you an illegal order, you're not supposed to keep that order. So if he's telling me that his order comes before the chiyuv of the Torah not to interrupt the learning, I'm not supposed to do it. And therefore, he was actually correct, and you were wrong. And by the way, you are the one, says the Sanhedrin. You, Yoav, you're the one who's Amoreit B'Malchus. By the way, before we just finished that point, the Gemara is going to point out later that Yoav did not understand that you're supposed to refuse an illegal order. And when he was sent an order by Dovid HaMelech to get rid, after the whole story where he impregnated Bathsheba, so he was told to make sure that Bathsheba's husband would be put in a place where he would get killed and so on, you know, and he kept to that order instead of refusing to do that order. So it was precisely in this issue that the two of them are compared, as we're going to see later. So Yoav was the one who was really not correct, and Amasa was correct. But you, says the Sanhedrin, now moving on, you are definitely Moreid B'Malchut, because it says in the Pasuk, V'hashmu'a ba ad Yoav, ki Yoav nata achare Adonio. So that Yoav was very nervous, because he had been backing Adonio ben Chagit against Shlomo ben Bathsheba. And Dovid HaMelech had always made it quite clear, and at the end, of course, at that day, he insists that that's the way it's going to be, that he wanted Shlomo to be the king. So when Yoav heard that actually the king had canceled Adonio's whole celebration, and so he was very nervous that he was a Moreid B'Malchut, because the truth is he was. Even though Acharei Avshalom lo nata. So why does it mention Acharei Avshalom lo nata? I mean, if Yoav hadn't done anything wrong, so why mention it? Because the meaning of lo nata means, says Rav Yehuda, that all along Yoav was disloyal. You couldn't trust him. Because it says over here, lo nata, that means that he didn't turn aside from David after Avshalom. But obviously he wanted to, otherwise why would it have even mentioned lo nata? Obviously lo nata. But the point is, bikesh lintot v'lo nata. But the only reason that he hadn't followed Avshalom and fought against David was because he knew what David was capable of. Omar Rabbi Elazar, that's because at that point, adayin lichluchit shel David kayemet. David at that point was still, so to speak, vigorous. He was still a youngster, lichluchit. So remember, later on, when everybody thought that David was out of it, you know, he's an old man, can't do anything. So that's when the problem started with Adonio, and there Yoav thought the same thing, that David basically is no longer functional. But at that point, he wasn't going to challenge David, because he understood that challenging David is a death sentence. But he would have liked to, so apparently he's a very disloyal person from the beginning, and therefore the Sanhedrin tainted that he is a Zedin, a Moreid B'Malchus. Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina Amar, that's not the reason. The reason wasn't because of David personally. It was because Adayin Itztagnine Shel David Kayomi. All of these people that were, remember, we had before, the 400 children that were all B'nai Yifas Toar, and that he had them wearing long ponytails, and they were all like 7 feet tall, and they dressed to kill, and they were all driving Mercedes, and you know, these guys were scary guys. They looked like when you put them on into tanks. I mean, oh my God, everybody ran the other way. Well, these guys were still around at that point. The Omer reviewed a Omerav Arbami Oti Ladima Yulo LeDavid Kulam Bnei Yifatuar Hayu. David HaMelech Rashi says elsewhere, it doesn't mean it was his biological children. It meant that he had, from various soldiers across the time in the various battles, soldiers that had fathered these kids, and he was doing some genetic selection over here, so he selected the most powerful and gorgeous of these guys, and he had 400 of them. All of them were wearing long ponytails, Megadle Belori Tayu. And they were at the head of the Marines there, Mahalka Baroshi Agaya Sotayu, and they put the fear of God into the Goyim that would see them, because they were obviously not regular Jewish guys, you know. I mean, this is not talking about these spectacular anti-Nazi bastards, but this is talking about they look like us, and obviously this is where they came from, you know. So, if they managed to father all of these kids from their enemies before, what's going to happen to us? So they turned the other way and ran. But anyway, these were called Hainain Balei Agropin Shel David. Remember we had before. And so he wasn't going to start up with David when he had these shock troops and secret police that were ready to go after him. Okay, so that means that Rav Yehuda holds that all along Yoav is disloyal. Now, actually, this is exactly opposite of the sheet of Rav Abba Bar Kahana, who holds that David and Yoav were a fantastic duo, totally loyal, and managed together to do what they did only because each was able to completely rely on the other. And Rama Rav Abba Bar Kahana, Ilmalei David lo asa Yoav milchama, v'ilmalei Yoav lo asak David batorah. This was an unbelievable lifetime partnership that they had, as long as it lasted, that if it weren't for David HaMelech and his learning that Yoav was connected to and believed in and supported, then Yoav would never have been so successful at the fighting that he engaged in, and vice versa. If David couldn't have relied 100% on Yoav, and he would have had to involve himself in all types of political and strategic planning, so he would never have been able to sit and learn all the time as he did. And you could see this in the pasuk, the chtiv, Vayhi David oseh mishpatu tzedaka l'chol amo, v'Yoav ben Tzruya l'atzava. What's the connection about to that? It's to teach me that ma ta'am, David oseh mishpatu tzedaka l'chol amo, because of the fact, mishum, Yoav al hatzava. And why ma ta'am Yoav al hatzava? Because David oseh mishpatu tzedaka l'chol amo. So we see from the smichas in the pasuk that these two individuals were extremely loyal, because when people are able to work together in a way that expresses their common loyalty to an ideal, that is not just a loyalty to each other. That is the deepest relationship in which two fuse into one. And that's exactly what David and Yoav were like. So don't tell me that Yoav was in any way disloyal to David. Now, looking at the...
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
Yeah.
I write a book called The World of Yeshiva. I'm reading it. He's talking about the conflicts between the Rosh Yeshiva and the executive director. And I don't understand what he's talking about. And then he says, the notable exception to this is the Ari Israel Yeshiva in Baltimore. Right, where there's a relationship between Rosh Yeshiva and Rabbi Lubegrain, that's what built it. Mamish is an exception.
Yeah. So Vayetze Yoav Me'im David. So let's just take a closer look at the Pesukim about what happened in the story of Yoav and Avner. So it says Vayetze Yoav Me'im David. And he then sneaks, he figures out a way to get Avner back. Though Avner had already left. So he's Vayishlach Malachim Achrei Avner. And he brings him back, and it gives the name of a strange place. Brought him back by the Bor HaSira. Ooh, that's weird. It seems to mean literally the pit of the thorn. What pit of a thorn? Rav Abba Bar Kahana, yes, the point over here is that it's merames on what had actually was the reason that it happened that Avner had been killed. It was because of a bor and a sirah. If you take a look back in the stories of the pre-murder over here, while things were completely at the beginning of this whole process, so remember that Shaul HaMelech was a little paranoid, to say the least, and he believed that David was attempting to kill him. And so there was a nace once that David walks into the machane of Shaul, and everyone is fast asleep, including all of the watchmen. Nobody is watching Shaul. If he had wanted to, he could have killed Shaul on the spot. And so what he did, he took Shaul's spear, and he took Shaul's canteen of water. Then he goes out, and he shouts, wakes them up, and shows them, what kind of watchman are you? This is how you take care of the king? I could have killed him. Look, here I have his spear, I have his canteen, but of course I would never kill him. I'm completely loyal to him. So he wanted to prove that he was loyal. So the Gemara says that Avner told Shaul, you can't believe that he really had taken this. Probably he's got a guy over here in the Machane who found them, brought them out to him. But you really think that if he would have gone into the Machane, he wouldn't have killed you? Of course he would have killed you. So basically that was a failure of reconstructing the relationship of David and Shaul. And we blame actually Avner for that. And then there was also the Sirah. What's the Sirah? The thorn. So you remember the story when Shaul was chasing after David and he goes into the Maharah and he doesn't realize that in that cave, David was hiding. And Shaul relieves himself in that cave, and David could easily have killed him. Instead, he cuts off a small piece of the edge of his beged, comes running after Shaul afterwards, and shows, look, I could have killed you. And here is the beged that I cut to prove it. I could just as easily have stabbed you, but I'm loyal to you. And again, Avner said, maybe the beged just got caught on a thorn that was there and he found it. And then he's claiming that he could have killed you. So that means twice Avner was the source of the failure of Shaul and David to be able to make up and bring Shalom Bineim. So because of that, the Torah's Merames over here, the boar and the sirah, that was the reason that this happened. Vayateu Yoav el toch hashar, ledaber ito basheli. Now, this is a strange language. So what happened? So Yoav had called Avner back, and then he takes him to the gate to be able to speak to him basheli. The pashtus of the word basheli is that it's from the word shalev, meaning quietly and without people around and without getting upset about anything. But what Rabbi Yochanan points out over here is, let's take a look at the word toch hashar. So toch hashar, remember, it's always Sanhedrin that is at the gates of the city. So bashar iro is a reference to Sanhedrin. What this means is that Yoav took Avner and handled him the way a Sanhedrin would have handled him, meaning he cross-examined him and wanted to find out whether he had anything to say in his benefit. So Yoav asks Avner, why did you kill my brother? My time katalte la asael. Avner said, well, I tried my very best not to kill your brother, but he wouldn't listen to me. I begged him to stop chasing me, and he was a rodef. And as a rodef, I had to kill him to save my own life. So Yoav said to him, but you didn't, did you? You could have stopped him from chasing you. You could have shot him in the legs or something. So you're not really a mutter as a rodef. No, said Avner, I couldn't. How could I be sure that I could aim properly? I couldn't be sure that I would get him. And then if I actually did that and I missed, then I would have slowed down enough for him to kill me. So Yoav said to him, come on, man. Hashto bedofen chamishit kivantale. You managed to really aim quite well, didn't you? So if you were able to get him right there, bedofen chamishit, to make sure that it was a fatal stab, so be'echad me'evarav lo yachaltale, you're trying to tell me that you couldn't have just shot him somewhere that would have put him out of commission? I guarantee you that wouldn't have been a problem. And so because of that, he, after questioning him, he saw that there was no real answer that Asael had for killing his brother. And because of that, he killed him as the Goel Adam. And what is the meaning of that word, basheli? So the basheli is a strange word. So ledaber ito basheli, omer of Yuna amarav al iske shalu. What it means over here is that he spoke to him about shal na'alecha mi'agra'alecha. So he asked him something about the dinim of chalitza. And that means that what the Gemara said elsewhere is that what he actually had asked him was, how in the world would it be possible to do chalitza if you don't have hands? And we paskin that a woman who doesn't have hands is nonetheless chayevet and able to perform chalitza. So Avner actually bends down to show how it's possible to take off a shoe with your jaw, with your teeth. And at that point, he was obviously in a position where he couldn't do anything defending himself. And it was at that moment that Yoav killed him. Vayakehu. It's actually interesting because David HaMelech mentions this in an interesting way. Because when David was dying, and he commands to get made to Shlomo to make sure to get rid of Yoav because of what he did. So, v'gamata yadata asher asali Yoav ben Tsruya. And as I mentioned, the Briskerov is medayik asher asali. That there are two things over here. One was the asher asali, which is the remes to the Merida b'malchus. And then there was the other thing that he killed, these two gedolim, as Avner ben Ner, and that he killed, and he didn't really have a right to, and he also killed Abasa ben Yeter, that he didn't have a right to, Vayiten dmei milchama b'chagorato asher b'motnav, listen to this, u'b'na'alo asher b'raglav, what the heck is that supposed to mean? He spilled blood with the shoe that's on his foot? So that was a remez, that was the mocker of the medrash, that it was actually a question about chalitza. And what did he do then? How did he kill him? He killed him mida keneged mida, because it says over there that Yoav, then yakehu sham hachomesh, and Rabbi Yochanan says hachomesh means bedofen chamishit, mokom shemara vekaveh tuliyimbo. That means Yoav killed Asael's murderer, Avner. We consider it to be a normal rotzeach and not responding to the din of saving his own life as a rodef, as he would have killed a rodef. So he killed Avner the same way that Avner had killed his brother Asael, precisely. So he was making it very clear that this is the vengeance of a Goel Adam, and vengeance is always Mida Keneged Mida. Ve'eshiv Hashem Edomo al Rosho. So what Shlomo HaMelech said, get rid of Yoav, and he chose to actually allow himself to be affected by those klalot. He said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put the blood that Yoav spilled on his own head. Asher paga b'shnei anashim tzadikim v'tovim mimenu. He killed two men who were better people than he was. They were greater tzadikim than he was, and they were better than he was. In what sense were they better than he was? Because they were Doresh Achim V'Rachim. We said before that Amasa was Doresh not to follow exactly what David had said because the mitzvah was more important than what a king has to say. And Avner must have done the same thing because we know that Avner did not actually keep the order of Shaul when Shaul said that the Kohanim should be killed. And in the end, Avner didn't do it. So if that's the case, remember we had before that it's machlokas, that maybe he actually had told Shaul, he was mochiach Shaul, you're not allowed to do this. But anyway, that meant that Avner also understood that you don't follow an order that's an illegal order. And you did, didn't you? And you were not Doresh, these Achin Varakim, not to follow the order to kill the husband of Bathsheba. And they were tzaddikim. They were more tzaddikim than you also, because look at the difference. Hein bepeh v'lo asu. They were given directly by the king an order that they refused to carry out. And you got a letter, you know? You didn't hear it directly. So you got a letter that says to kill Uriah Hachiti. Now, you knew perfectly well that there was no justification of killing Uriah Hachiti. And you did it anyway. So who's the bigger tzaddik, them or you? Anyway, so getting back to the murder of Amasa. So it says, Amasa lo nishmar b'cherev asher b'yad Yoav. Amasa didn't pay any attention to the fact that Yoav had a sword, Omarav shaloch ashado. It never even occurred to him that Yoav would want to kill him. Vayikaver babeto bamidbar, and after the death of Yoav, it says he was buried in his home in the desert. So what do you mean, in the desert? Atu beto midbaru. How could you say that Yoav lived in the desert? I mean, Yoav was a central figure in the government. He certainly could not have gone and lived in the desert. He needed to be available at all times to protect the king, go to war, do whatever is necessary. He certainly didn't live in a midbar. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, what the pasuk means is his home was like a midbar in the sense of just like a midbar's mufkar lakol. The point of a midbar is that it's open to all. It's not settled land. That's the way he treated his house, his home, his property. Anyone who needed anything could come to Yoav and get whatever it is that he wanted. He was mafkir anything in his house, a poor person who needed it. So please come in, take anything that you need. And a dover acher kam midbar. A midbar is a place where nobody lives. And because of that, it's a wonderful place to live. There's no gezel. There's no arayot. There's no lashon hara. There's none of the garbage that affects people in settled places. That's why, as the Rambam says, better go out to a midbar. If you have to live in a society such as the one we have today, go to the desert and set yourself up a little tent in the desert. You'll be much happier. So just like a midbar is menukeh, migazel v'arayot av beito shel Yoav. Yoav was a tremendous tzaddik, and he was menukeh migazel v'arayot. And when it says, when it refers over there in Divrei Hayomim to the way that David and Yoav took different areas in the of responsibility in rebuilding, strengthening Yerushalayim, making it into the capital city. So it says over there that David HaMelech, he dealt with the area of the Choma and the places around the city, and Yoav, Yechaye et Sha'ar Ha'ir. Whereas Yoav, it doesn't say that he built. It says that he brought to life. That's pretty strong language. Yechaye et Sha'ar Ha'ir. Now, normally, you'll remember the Lashon in Yiddish, Ah, a mechaya. So what does a mechaya mean? Oh, man, this is great, right? So this is the idea that we were derish, arzot achayim, as the Gemara says, that shopping malls where you can get all kinds of mechaya things. Ah, this is great. Anyway, so it must mean that when he gave out tzedakah, it wasn't just for, you know, the essentials, but actually, he would bring out Richie's kind of best gravlax and herring and anything that you wanted, even munini v'tzachanata ta'im. He would give the most delicious delicacies that he was eating. Porislu, he would give it out to the people of the city in Yerushalayim, which is a real mechaya. Hadran alach nigmar hadin.
A quick question before we go on, Rabbi.
Yes, sir.
It seems from the sugya, it seems he was a very complex individual. It seemed he had a very close relationship with Dada Vishnu. But he betrayed him in the end. That betrayal broke down the entire relationship. So wasn't Dada justified to go after him and curse him? And if that's true, then why did Dada get punished?
Yes, indeed. Life turns out to be slightly more complicated than we'd like it to be. So when we have a lifetime to discuss, Bezrat Hashem, I'll be happy to sit down with you and use one of those many lifetimes to get to the bottom of this. Meanwhile, I got my own problems. Okay. We have to ask Trevor, you know, I mean, I take up his bathroom when I go down there. He says it's okay. Alrighty. So, as our intrepid, wonderful Richie has told us, find on their Halakha Perek, Arba Mitot Nimsu LeBeit Din. So, there were four different ways that the Torah gives over to Beit Din to be used for execution, which is mashma that there is no other way that they can execute someone. Now, we know for a fact, we saw, and we're going to see more about this later, that if someone is unable to be killed, but this is said about a rotzeach, and he's escaping, you can even shoot him. But that's a special din by a rotzeach, possibly. And maybe Besdin actually only has these four things that are given into their hands, and they don't have a right, even in extrajudicial cases. There are some achronim utayna this. It's a little bit unreasonable, but that's the mashma'ut of the word nimsirut. so that Besdin was given the right to utilize only these arba mitot and no other, except, of course, where the pasuk says beferish otherwise. And they are, in this particular order, skila, sreifa, hereg, vechenek. So we're going to go from the most chomer, which is skila, down to the least chomer, which is chenek. That's the shita of the Tanakama, skila, sreifa, hereg, chenek. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says that's not the correct order, and we've seen this several times. According to Rabbi Shimon, actually, sreifa is more chomer than skila, and therefore it should be sreifa skila, not skila sreifa. And according to Rabbi Shimon, chenek is more chomer than hereg. And therefore, according to him, the correct order is not hereg v'chenek, but chenek v'hereg. And therefore, we have sreifa skila, chenek v'hereg. What we've learned so far, says the Mishnah in the previous perek, was the mitzvahs haniskolim. So we took the niskolim as being the model that we had for the judicial procedure, coming to the Beit HaSkila and saying the vidui and all of the other dinim, because we have the complexities when it comes to Skila about whether we're toiling all of the niskolim or toiling only the Kefrim and the Avdei Avodah Zarah, those who were Bekalas Hashem, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that was the previous perek. Now we're going to move on in this perek, says the Mishnah, to discuss the others. So we've done the Niskolim. Zu mitzvat haniskolim so far. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Schora, Amar Rav Huna. Fascinating thing, which stands immediately against what we just read. Kol makom sheshanu chachamim derech minyan, en mukdam u'muchar. Where a Mishnah or a Braita is listing things just to give you the list of the items, there is no meaning to the order that is going to be koveya the din. There may be meaning, as we'll see, but it's not a meaning that is actually going to make a difference at the end, la halacha, if it's done otherwise. And oftentimes, there's no particular meaning to it at all. Well, that's quite clearly not true in this Mishnah. But we don't list this Mishnah as being an exception to the rule. We list another Mishnah as being an exception to the rule, and that is the case of the Shiva Samemonim. So there we know that the Mishnah in Nida says, if you need to establish whether a stain, a red stain, is a blood stain or whether it's some type of dye stuff or other thing, there is a chemical way to determine whether something is blood or not. And this is very nogea, because the question is it tamei or is it not tamei? So if we find a ketem, we don't know whether it's actually dam tummy or not, we can establish whether it's dam, because the Mishnah says we have shiva samanim avirim al ketem. We have these seven different chemicals, essentially. I mean, that's simple chemicals. They're complex things. So first, and we're going to see it has to be in this order. First, you soak it with rok tafel, and you try to take the stain off. So rok tafel means that this is saliva from someone who hasn't had anything at all to eat. So tafel means that it is tasteless, so that the entire day this person has not eaten. Megrisin, grisin are beans, and the megrisin are beans that have been chewed into a paste. Meiraglayim, which is urine, but doesn't mean fresh urine. It means ammonia, essentially. It's been left around till it turns into ammonia. Neter, which is the a type of a chemical deposit in the earth. Borit, which is always, it was used all the time as a soap. Kamulia, which is not actually well known what it is. Rashi doesn't offer any explanation. Ashlach, which is probably ashlag, what we call today potash. And it says beferish in that Mishnah, Vikatani Seifa, that if you don't do it in this order, or if you mix all of these seven agents into one, you didn't do a darn thing. Lo asav lo klum, and it's a useless test. Test has to be done by putting these seven chemicals in that precise order. So that would mean that in this Mishnah, it's obvious that the order is meant particularly. But In cases where the Mishnah doesn't say so, what Rava is claiming it would be the din is that it really wouldn't matter. Rav Papa the Saba said over in Rav's name, no, our Mishnah obviously is meant to be in order, af arba mitot, because we see very clearly if there's a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehud and Rabbi Shimon as to what the correct order is, then obviously the Mishnah means to have an order as precisely this order, and it's teaching us the din, which one is chomer and which one is kal. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty clear, isn't it? So how the heck could we have said, this quote of Rav Sechora, how could we have said that even including our Mishnah, he didn't say our Mishnah is not, even including our Mishnah, it doesn't really matter. Of course it matters. Well, he's not talking about a Mishnah that argues about the order. I mean, if there's an argument about the order, then the order is relevant. That's the whole point, isn't it? So he's not talking about cases that they're saying where you were given an order, and that order appears to be just taken for granted, that that's the correct order. It's not meant to necessarily be an absolute order. Rav Papa says, well, wait a minute. I mean, there's another Mishnah that is also very, very specific. The entire Seder of Yuma and Masechet Yuma has to be done in the order like the Mishnah in Yuma says. Koma se Yoma Kippurim Amurim al ha-Seder. Oh my gosh, this is all the things that have been said in this Masechet, that along the Seder of how you're supposed to do these things on Yom Kippur Day, it means that they have to be done in that correct order. And im hikdim ma'aseh l'chaveiro, lo asav lo klum. You have not done anything. If you did it in the wrong order, you'll have to redo it. Gosh, that seems pretty clear that it is actually meant very much as a particular order. So how could we have left that out? So what did Rav Sechora mean? The Idach, I mean, not only that, Rav Papa Saba also left it out. No, that's different. There it has nothing to do. I'm not talking about Seder in terms of an extrinsic Seder. I'm talking about a Seder that is defined by the relationship of the items that you're listing to each other. Here, on the reason you have to do one Aveda at this time and another Aveda at another time has nothing to do with an intrinsic relationship that this Aveda is more Choshev and therefore it comes first. It has nothing to do with more Choshev. It has to do with the Seder Aveda Sayom because of the Dinim of Yom Kippur. But that has nothing to do with the list. I'm saying that when you make a list, a listing is not an order. If I'm telling you over the Seder of how to do things, well, that's an order, but it's not an order of the items in the list. You see, that's what was meant. So, ahu chumra b'yoma, that's a chumra of Yom HaKippurim, where it says chok, everything has to be done according to this particular way. Fine, obviously. Rav Huna b'Reid Rav Yeshua says, now, wait a minute, what about the order of things that need to be done in Masechet Tamid as the Mishnah? Yeah? You don't like my approach? Well, I don't know. Why are you saying that it has to be different?
Rabbi Alma, but if it changed, it wouldn't be Ba'akya. Rabbi's taking a whole different take on that.
Oh, I see. You're sort of jumping ahead, Rabbanya. At this point, we don't know this. Just wait a moment. Wait a moment. You'll see. Rav Huna b'Reid Rav Yeshua Amar, well, what about Seder Tamid? Diktani Allah, Zehu Seder Tamid, says Beferish in the Mishnah. This, what we've said until now, this is the end of Tamid, what we've said in this order is the actual order that you're supposed to do, and that means that it is specific. So what does Rav Papa hold? He says there it's a mitzvah bi'alma, so it's not considered to be different from the klal, because we never said that we don't list things in an order at all. What I said was that it's not going to make a difference if you don't do the order. So in this case, the only place where it will make a difference and will be completely ma'akev is in this case. That's what I was saying. That's the Shiva Samamonim case. But if you don't do the Seder of the Tumit correctly, so that wouldn't matter because it's only a lechatchila. It's lemitzvah, but it is not actually ma'akev. And since it's not ma'akev, therefore it doesn't matter. Fine. So what is it now that bothers you? You see, this is the inyan of not ma'akev. Where do you think that Rashi says otherwise in terms of the Chumra Biyam? I don't understand. I think that you're looking, that's what I said, you're jumping ahead. Rashi says beferish that when it comes, obviously, chok is ma'akev on Yom Kippurim, it's not l'chatchila, that's not what it means. It means, I don't know, I think you just maybe confused the two Rashis. Is it possible? I mean, Rashi says several times that it's la'akev. Obviously it's la'akev. Chok is la'akev.
Okay, thank you.
Right? All right, so that's what I thought you must have been referring to later. All right, so now, in making this statement, you're obviously trying to say that something that without, if I hadn't known what you said, I would have made a mistake. What are you coming to tell me is actually not meant to be specifically in an order? Oh, I'll tell you what would have confused you. And that would have been chalitza. Lafuke mi mitzvahs chalitza. It's not mitzvahs chalitza. How do we do chalitza? First, the Yovam and the Yavama come to Besdin. The Besdin gives him an Eitzah that's based on whether it makes sense for the two of them to get married, or it doesn't, maybe the age difference is too big or whatever. So they give him an Eitzah Hogenes Lo. What do you think we should do? The Besdin tells him what they think. Because it says, V'koru lo ziknei iro v'dibru elav. So what's v'dibru elav? V'dibru elav means they should give him advice. And at that point, he omeret, if it's decided that he's not going to take her as a yavama and he should do chalitza. So at that point, she says, Me'ein yami, my yavam refuses to do what the Torah said. And he says, indeed, lo chafatzti lekachta, I don't want to take her as my wife. All of these are the lashonas of the psukim. We're just going through in short what it says. She says really the whole thing, Me'ein yami, la'akib la'achiv shem b'Yisrael, lo ava yami. And he says, lo chafatzti lekachta, and this has to be done exactly in those words. It has to be said, bilashon HaKodesh, particularly, they don't just say the idea, they say these specific words, as we saw in Sota, and then, v'nikshaya v'imtoi lav le'nei zekenim, she goes over to him in front of the bezdin, v'chaltza na'alo, she takes off his shoe, v'yarka b'fanav, she spits in front of him, that means it has to be roka nir ela dayanim. This is something that the Dayanim have to actually see, that there was spit, and she actually, antava omra kocha ye'asele isha sherlo yivneet beit achiv, and she then says again in Lashon HaKodesh, this is what is done to a man who won't build up the home of his brother, and then v'nikra shmo b'Yisrael beit chalutz hana'al, which means that at that point, everybody says, Chalutzana, Chalutzana. And Rav Yehuda says something, it doesn't seem to make much sense. He says, Mitzvah's Chalitza is, first, Korah, she says, Me'en Yami, and then Korei, and then we have the Chalitza, and then we have the Rekika, and then we have her Kriya again. So it's, he himself says, I don't want her. That's the Korei. She does the Chalitza. She spits. And then she says what Kachaya says. So that means that Rev Yehuda is simply repeating what we just read. So Avinamba, we asked over there, what in the world is Rev Yehuda's point? I know how to read the Mishnah. So Michael Mashmalan Masisini. And what we explained was, is that when Rav Yehuda said in the Mishnah, mitzvahs chalitza, what he's talking about is that it's only a mitzvah. It's not, it's a lechatchila, but it's not ma'akev. V'apech letlanba. And it doesn't change the chalitza's ability to be mater her if it's done not in this particular order. So therefore, basically, we are coming here to say, just because a Mishnah has something in a particular order doesn't mean that that order is ma'akev. Tanya nami achi, bein shehikdim chalitza l'rekika, or rekika l'chalitza. It really doesn't matter whether she spits first and then does the chalitza, or does the chalitza first and then does the rekika. The truth is that b'diavad, masha asa asui, and that's what Rav Sechora was saying, that in the Seder of the Mishnah, it's not ma'akev. And there was another Mishnah also that he wanted to make clear is not ma'akev. V'la'afuke miha. And how about this Mishnah? The Mishnah over here in Yoma talks about the begodim of the Kohanim. So it says, it's not. Kohen gadol mishamish b'shmone begodim v'hedyot b'arba'a. What are the four begodim of the Kohen hedyot? So that would be the ketonet, the mikvasayim, the mitznefet, and the avnit. And the Kohen gadol adds to that the choshen, and the ephod, and the me'il, and the tzitz. Now, the order, however, of putting on the clothing is different than the order that is given in the Mishnah of the clothing. V'tanya, minayin shelo yedavar kodem l'michvasayim. How do we know that you don't put on any of the other clothing before you put on these pants, which are essentially underpants, really, as well? Shenemar umichde sevad yu al bisaro, so that these pants, or breeches really, because they're long pants, that they should be on his busser, directly on his busser, before anything else is there. So then, okay, so why did the Tana say the ketonet first before talking about the michnasayim? I mean, there's no value to saying it wrong. I mean, why would he say it wrong if you could say it right? So, Tana mai taima aktame l'ktonet. That's mishum to aktame kro. Look, the pasuk says, ktonet bad kodesh yubash, umichnes evad yuah besoro. So that means that obviously the Torah views the chashivas of the ktonet as coming before the michnasayim. It's just that the michnasayim, we're saying over here, are supposed to be the first thing that you put on. That's not because of the chashivas, it's just because to cover a body, the first thing that you do is you cover the genitals. So therefore, we put it this way, but putting on the pants first and then putting on the ketonet. But in terms of the chashivas, it's clear that the pasuk views the ketonet bat kodesh as being most chashiv. So that's mishum da akhtam ekra. And indeed, why akhtam ekra? Because the truth is that the ketonet is more choshev because it's b'chasi kula gufe. In the end, it covers basically his whole body, and therefore, as a beged, it's really more choshev. Okay.